Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Stamp, the kick, it's been blocked again! Oh my! It's been blocked again!
He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyreek Cleveland! Oh my! I can't believe what I just saw!
Dropping back the throw, pops and fires the ball.
Have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
Della Torre.
And your boy Jay Scar 25. What it do, y'all, boy?
What up, 25?
Yes, sir.
Same corner, same time. Happy Monday. It's hot outside. That's the moral of the story, man. My world, man.
It is hot. It is unbearably hot outside. Shout out to this comment. I miss Mick too. What a voice.
That new guy, like
Sean Kelly.
Yeah, man.
No Mick Hubert. No Mick Hubert.
Anyway, like can somebody plant some dope in his car or something? Let's get him out of here, man. I kid.
Hey, go Gators. That's right. Gators. Watching. Thanks for watching. How's y'all's boys weekends?
Real quick, Mick Hubert. We did an interview with him. He was not a McElwain fan, Jordan.
Woo!
That's Coach a shocker.
He went off on your guy.
Does McElwain have any personal favorite?
McElwain got a lot of ops, though. I came out to you.
How do you think that is, Jordan?
That's why they leaked that picture.
Yeah, I just don't think he was very liked from when he came in. You know,
I
obviously gave it. I don't know why. I mean, it's a lot of reasons.
I mean, he said he could teach his dog how to play quarterback. I was like, all right, bro.
Stuff like that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Nah. Like, he was.
No, come on. We were all lying.
No, at first
when
I was.
When he said Clarabelle could play quarterback.
Yeah,
you believe it?
Good run while it lasted. You benefited off the roster. I can tell you that.
There's always something in that presser, right? There's always something when you look back and be like, hindsight 2020. We got to do an episode on that, like things that were said or done in the beginning of some of these hires that was red flags. We got to do an episode on that. But that was a flag, bro. When he said that Clarabelle, it was ding, ding, ding. I was like, man, no, bro.
Yeah. That's the confidence isn't going to work. Yeah, I mean, with Napier, I guess it was the methodical approach, the organization. Mullen, I'd have to look back, but there's always something.
No,
but
Mullen was like on paper, made nerdy. Sense.
Yeah,
on paper.
No, Gator fans were mad at Mullen, bro.
Yeah. People
I still think Mullen was the best hire in the last decade. I don't care what y'all say.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's not saying that, Jordan.
We're not saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's not too much saying too much considering what he was going up against, but maybe I'm a little biased because he coached me, but like I think he was all right. Recruiting wise, we didn't have the best years.
He's the GOAT.
COVID messed it up.
True.
I think he changed a lot in COVID. I think NIL was so everybody's trying to figure it out, and it just was so out of the realm of what he was used to. But I really think that COVID year, and then I really thought that he could parlay this job into an NFL job, and then that didn't work out. And then he's like, oh, man, I'm kind of stuck here. And then at that point, he kind of already given up.
Yeah.
Well, I think the fans' opinion on him when he first got the job, like the complaints were he doesn't like to recruit. You know, same things you heard from Mississippi State. And he overcame that in the beginning by just winning. But it became true. Like the red flags in the beginning that we thought of Dan Mullen, he can't recruit, doesn't care about recruiting. It came back to bite him in the butt.
Yeah, he inherited a good roster.
He did. Good evaluations.
Yeah.
He inherited a good roster. They had like LP, Kadarius Toney, Kyle Pitts, Kyle Trask.
What was Kyle Pitts ranked coming out of high school? Like
he's a 3-star. I don't know if he called a 4-star, but he's definitely a 3-star.
I think he wasn't that highly rated because I mean he wasn't in the talk of the town. Yeah, and I think that's probably why he never really took recruiting to that aspect of like I need to get 4 or 5-star guys and load up the roster. Ball. He knows that he can coach somebody up to be a good player.
He did. He was found as a 3-star. He ended up being a 4-star. He ended up being, the 161st overall player in the country. Mm. But I think at the time he was like the 73rd ranked like wide receiver at the time. Like he was ranked really low. And so –
yeah. Enough of Dan Mullen and McElwain. Enough Dan Mullen. We got new lives to tell.
Back to the weekends. I would like to pat myself on the back. My wife and I, my parents selfishly left their grandkids with my wife and I unsupervised for 15 days. And we made it. They've come back from their Alaskan cruise and skirting their responsibilities as grandparents. But Lauren and I made it. Very tired. Dad tip for any new dads out there with toddlers, Bass Pro Shops has live fish. Killed 45 minutes. Just walked into Bass Pro Shop, put it in the aquarium, just hung out.
Instead of going to the zoo, you can't afford the zoo, you know, like to go to aquarium?
The zoo here is just like lizards and stuff. We don't have a good zoo here in Gainesville.
Nick's going to start talking about the reptile store there that's on 34th. I don't even know if it's still there anymore. So we went and looked at lizards and snakes.
She loves the birds at PetSmart. We did a 1-2 punch. Went PetSmart.
Nick's going to start catching some lorries here sooner in Gainesville.
Not at that age yet, huh?
Hmm. But yeah, selfish grandparents. Shout out to them. Love my mom and dad.
Good weekend. Good weekend for me. I was telling you guys a little bit about nobody cares, so I'm not going to tell them about my my phone issue that I had. But I spent the weekend over in St. Pete Beach. So I did a little staycation like 5 miles away, but it was awesome. So we actually had some great weather while we were out there. So it was good to be out there. Needed a vacation. So that was nice. And then this weekend, my brother and his wife and their 2 kids are coming up to Tampa or over St. Pete here. Pardon me. And so I'm going to know a little bit about what it's like to be a dad on a weekend. You know, the parents will still be there, but
in reps.
I'm No, I don't need any reps. Don't need any reps. Hey, Lori, you're listening. No reps.
Hey, man, I wish you luck this weekend. You may need God's a few drinks.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean, I could just Heisman them back over to their parents. But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a long time since my brother's been up to this area. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, man. I had a pretty chill, boring dad weekend. No, man, I don't want to bore y'all with too much of my shenanigans, but similar to Nick, just finding ways to kill time throughout the day. We hit the pool. That's only going to last you about 2 hours, maybe three. Today, hungry, ready to get out. Got to figure out things to do. So my new thing is just telling my daughter when she's bored, I say, get creative and figure it out yourself. All these toys in the house, figure it out, okay? They are probably self, but it all works
we've
out.
Lost the art of just being bored, you know? I had this discussion with my mom all the time. Like when you were a kid, sometimes you're just bored and like there was nothing you could do. You just had to be bored. And I think that that helped with like growing up and realizing that there's parts of life that are boring. And this isn't me like being holier than thou. Just a matter of like, because there's so much stimulation around that it's really hard to be bored because like you're just not used to it. And then you're like, well, I'm over this. I want the next thing. It's like, well, shucks, you're going to be doing this for the next 2 hours, so you better figure out a way to like it.
I swear.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I just told my son on the ride home, like, there's no only way you get successful, wealthy, et cetera, if you're willing to get bored. Studying is boring. Yeah. Like, nobody really wants, even like working out and training, locking in and cutting out rest of the training, it's boring. Like, if you're not willing to be boring, you're going nowhere fast. You want to have fun, you're going to be bored.
Like, yeah, you're gonna be broken, you're gonna be in trouble somehow, some way.
Yes, it's a skill. Being bored, like knowing how to be bored, is definitely a skill. Then
that's a fact.
My weekend, yeah. I went to Atlanta, man. My brother retirement ceremony up in Marietta. He retired. Did two branches, Navy and Coast Guard, 24 years. So Chief Nose called to quits this past week. We enjoyed that, and that was it, man. Drive up was always exciting. That drive back was brutal. I'm fresh out the road, man. Feel like I got drunk.
your brother is an awesome dude. I've had the chance to meet with him a few times. Congratulations to him. How long? Like 20 years?
No, 24.
That's awesome, mm-hmm. man. Shout out to Trey.
What does the military do for like retirement? Pension?
Oh yeah, bro. They run it up, man. You run the disability up. There's so many levels to it, bro. Your cats get some fat pensions and you know retirement setups, bro. Like
Rob Gronkowski has told me on television that he's gonna have great car insurance. All of his any offspring he has.
Yeah, all these kids go to college for free, but also PTSD pays, man, for sure. In the military when you retire, like you get your nice package. Pause.
You know, I heard the disability was sweet as far as when it came to like just retiring from the military. I was like, dang.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. If you are a disabled veteran, Jordan didn't really mean it's sweet as in you're disabled, just that.
Hey, hold on. I'll be right back up.
Yeah, you got it.
For guys who are really disabled, sorry, y'all. Right. For the ones that's out there pulling the fast one, you know who you are. Congratulations to you too.
Yeah. I just didn't want to get you canceled, Jordan. You know what I mean?
Right.
When this clip hits Fox News, I have not co-signed what my co-host said.
I've seen clips get very much taken out of context.
Just Jordan in his camo bucket hat as well.
That's right.
I'm representing, so you know I'm on y'all side for real. Don't take my words too hard. You know what I'm saying? Hey, NFL guys do the same thing, man. Them NFL dudes be juicing that disability too. Honestly.
We got a good show today. We're going to talk a little bit about the offensive line. And then we are going to talk with RJ Raymond, right, Jordan?
Yep.
So RJ Raymond, former walk-on, tight end, linebacker, just a guy that liked to get hit or be hit, or to hit or get hit. He's going to join us as well to talk about his story. But let's get on with the show. We're going to talk at the top of the show a little bit about baseball because there was a big draft this weekend. Gators probably ended up in the best position they possibly could after the end of that. But before we do that, let's get a quick ad read from Corey. Then I'll close this out and we'll get on with the show.
Stady Miguel is powered by the great folks at Brunt Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you need insured from the panhandle all the way to the Keys. My man, Greg. I'm going to say Dan. I don't know why. Dan don't sell insurance. He looks like an insurance guy, though. My man Greg can get you in the best shape and the best price, whether it's car insurance, home insurance, motorcycles, RVs, anything that has wheels, boats, anything that float, probably. You got the right size craft. I'm pretty sure he can put you in the game. It don't cost you a dime to see if you can save a dime. Visit bruntinsurance.com or give him a call at 954-589-2204. Greg.
Greg, what it do, baby?
And then one time for our friends over the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. If you are looking for a group of attorneys that used to work for the insurance companies that now will work for you, give them a call, 727-258-0043, or visit them at dykusburkelaw.com. Anything from storm damage, water damage, hurricane damage, pipe leak damage, sinkhole damage, whatever it might be, these are the guys that you want to go to. Again, the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group, 727-258-0043. And with that, Nick, MLB draft, talk to us a little bit.
First time podcasting, Mike is muted. I think Florida had six guys drafted. I'm pulling it up. I had this ready to go. Headlined by Liam Peterson, the 2 year Friday night starter for 2 years, lost that role this year. He was the 21st first round pick in program history, 19th overall to the Guardians. A lot of fans told fans all year long who were complaining about the way he pitched that the draft is on projection and he has some of the best stuff, raw stuff that I've ever seen. The results weren't there. But 19th overall, I think slot is like $11 million, something like that. Or no, sorry. The slot's like $7 million. Otherwise, after him was Kyle Jones, round three, pick 102 to the Brewers. Russell Sandifer, great spot for him. He's a guy who could have had a year to come back, play his fifth year, but he goes fourth round, 132nd overall to the Dodgers, so he'll be gone. Luke McNeely was 152nd overall, round five to the Mets. Hayden Yost, round five, pick 162. And senior, Blake Sear, 18th pick, went 548 to the Yankees. All of those guys will go pro. In my guess, like, they're going to negotiate and do their thing, but I would expect all of those guys to turn pro. And then in the recruiting class-wise, the only guy I think you lose is Kevin Roberts Jr., the outfielder, infielder, 6'5", 220-pound kid from Mississippi. I think this is just me. He got drafted in the fourth round. The slot's like $770,000. That's a lot of money to turn down. Go pro. You're literally, someone is telling you, we're going to pay you $750,000 to live your dream.
So before you go on, Nick, how is, when you say, let's just say $750,000 exactly, is that a signing bonus?
Yeah.
Mainly?
So that's a sign. You get paid.
And then you get like a minimum.
Your salary is squat. So the signing bonus is paid out over the length of your deal. Fourth round pick is 5 years, I think. So you're getting that 770 or whatever the government doesn't take out of the 770. Jordan probably knows that after getting drafted. We say 770, it might be 350.
Sad day.
And then that's spread out over 5 years. So
154 a year times 0.6 is 92,400. You got to pay an agent fee. So that's another three. All right. I mean, yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
It's not life changing money, but you're professional. Yeah. You're a professional. And,
yeah, you're a professional baseball player.
And that's, and that's as a fourth round pick, a team is loyal to you. The team is going to give 100%. You a bunch of opportunities. But
I'm not diminishing that number, internet. Also, right. I'm just, yeah, I didn't know that that's how the deals were split up.
That's what Dan used to pay his butler to go shopping for.
I don't have a butler.
And bring it up to the penthouse. Bring it up to the penthouse.
I used Kroger when they were in Florida to deliver my groceries. It was $1.99. Keep it going.
That's what Dan and Vale Harrison and Dan, that money's nothing to them. Peanuts.
It's a large sum of money.
So I expect Kevin Roberts to go to school. Some guys have
to go to school or Brady, to go pro.
Sorry, to go pro. Some guys have turned that stuff down. Brady Singer was a second round pick in high school. And
wasn't AJ Puck like the ninth overall pick?
No. He was Carson Whitson. Carson Whitson was the ninth overall pick in the draft and went to school. It didn't work out for Carson. He blew his arm out. But he has tweeted at me that he had made the right decision and would do it all over again. But to me, the SEC, so schools have put so much money into college baseball. A lot of that is aided by, like, every game is watchable now. The game has grown. If you look at the numbers from the College World Series year after year, it keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the schools are investing that money in baseball programs. Florida used to bus to like Tennessee. Now they take charter flights all around the SEC. So like your quality of life is so much better. And the competition in the SEC, your eight, your 10 SEC series, your Tennessee weekends, a lot of weekends is better than even high A ball. So my argument to these guys is now with NIL, and with the investment that colleges are putting into the baseball programs, I would treat 3 years at an SEC school as three of the best years that I'll ever get in the minors and skip 3 years of busing through Tupelo, Mississippi. Nothing that there's wrong with Tupelo, Mississippi. Nothing wrong with the Montgomery Biscuits. But I'm just saying, do I want to be on a school bus for 13 hours on my one off day? Because they play six times a week, or do I want to play college ball? But like fourth round pick, if someone picked me in the fourth round when I was 18 years old, school can kiss my ass. I'm out of here.
What, Nick? I'm not asking you to divulge anything about what we pay guys on our team, but like if you're good or very good player, obviously getting drafted in the fourth round, you're an exceptional player. You're one of the top 120 players in the country. Is it possible that a lot of schools are paying baseball players $750,000 over 3 years?
Over 3 years? No, like not even. I mean, some schools, like
theoretically, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, though.
That would be an outlier. Yeah, but like,
gotcha. Okay,
you're not making $750,000. Like the signing bonus, $750,000. But what's actually hitting your bank account of that?
Well, I mean, it's still the same, right? Like, you're still going to have to pay taxes on it and everything else, whether you get it as a signing bonus or whether you get it as NIL. Sure. I was just curious, like, where that, like, inflection point is. Is it
fifth round slot money usually?
Is it sixth round where you're like, hey, I'm probably not, and I could use the development?
I mean, there's guys who – I mean, I don't know other people's books, but, like, I know of guys – within the last couple of years that went to Tennessee for $750,000 per year. So like there's guys, but those guys were, you know, those were two of the like highest paid guys. I don't know that many guys are getting more than $750,000, and those would be outliers, but there's college baseball rosters that are $3, $4, $5, $6 million.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so Kevin Roberts probably go, and that was expected, right? This wasn't a guy that was.
I thought he was a raw prospect that needed to develop, but like he's 6'5", 220. He can play shortstop. He can play center field. He can play anywhere on the field.
Yeah.
He ran like a 6.260. He ran like the equivalent of like a low 4.340 for baseball, and he throws the ball 94 miles an hour across the diamond. Like raw tools, yeah. Super raw power, raw tools. Like he's gonna. I would just me personally now. I would rather spend three of my minor league years at an SEC school, but
sure.
But yeah. Fourth round pick. That's incredible. Incredible. Yeah. He was a kid who, just depending on the team, some team was going to look at that and be like, yeah, we need that.
Okay. All right. So Gators potentially losing Kevin Roberts.
Yeah. We won't know, but I would
expect. Right. Yeah. We won't know for a couple weeks.
You get Brady Harris back, who's a guy who coming into, he had a bad senior year. But going into his senior year was a top three high school prospect in the country. You get him to come to campus when, you know, he's someone who committed to Florida when he was 14 years old. And I think for the last 3 years, I've been telling people like, yeah, like don't, he's not coming to school. Like here's him hitting a 400 foot home run in high school, but like, don't expect him to be in orange and blue. I think a lot of the things too, people need to understand. So like Ethan Cerwick went undrafted. We announced back 3 weeks ago that he had signed a contract with us. If he would have gotten drafted and decided to sign and go pro, that it doesn't matter that he signed with us. It would just like null the contract, void the contract. And you get to a point where it's not that he wasn't good enough to be drafted. You get to a point where like, hey, he's not going to sign for what you can offer him after probably the third, fourth round. Like he's just not going to sign. So a team ends up not wasting a draft pick because I think the kid's not going to sign. So that's what happens with like Brady Harris and Ethan Cerwick and guys like that.
Okay. But so the Gators should get most of their recruiting class, which was highly ranked, back. You get a couple starters back, and the Gators look to have a very talented team. Based on all of the reports that I read online, there's very high expectations about what this Gators roster looks like heading into next season. Would you agree with that, Nick?
Yes. That's just how it goes in Gainesville. The baseball team's always going to be good.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
Even when they're not as good as we expect them to be, they still host regionals.
It's a hard sport, man. It's a hard sport. I mean, the Mets are paying, what, $310 million in stink. So, but, I mean, that's – the Marlins had the best record in baseball in the month of June, right? So
We are one of the most exciting teams in baseball, and you'll love to see it. You'll love to see it.
As a huge Marlins fan myself, I'd love to see it. I haven't watched a game in a long time. Go Marlins. Go Fish. Go Fish. Big Chuck Carr fan. Bobby Bonilla, Luis Castillo, Edgar Renteria, Rob Men. Man, just the names.
Before we get off.
Trevor Hoffman, before he became the GOAT of closing, Marlins legend.
Brief, yeah. Mike Piazza, Marlins legend.
Mike Piazza was a Marlins legend. Not the best catcher. Well, he played third base, but CJ, my guy CJ, 2-3. Woo!
Who? Charles Johnson was a catcher, not third base.
Yeah, that's what I said. No, I said Mike Piazza was our best catcher. And I was like, no, he played third base.
Pudge. I would say Ivan Rodriguez is our best catcher.
I like CJ just has some more fond memories. But anyway,
While we're on baseball, before we get off baseball, Home Run Derby tonight, it is back off of the stupid as many swings as you can get in 3 minutes. Back to, I think it's 20 swings, 15 swings, 15 swings. It's a little bit more than the, hey, you get 10 outs. But I like that in a competition of how far you can hit a baseball, I like that we're back to actually seeing how far the baseballs go instead of running pitches like an auctioneer.
When is All-Star Games in Baltimore?
It's in Philly.
Okay, so it's in Philly. I saw Cags was hitting with his dad, who is going to be pitching to him today at Camden Yards yesterday. So best of luck to Gator legend Jack Caglione, who seems to be turning it on this year and being
like he
thought, or at least the last couple of months.
Yeah, the wind is blowing out. It's a tiny ballpark. I love Cags' chances tonight. Super cool. Like, how cool would it be your dad's your coach, like, all the way up until high school, and then you get to call him and be like, hey, you want to come throw BP like we're 10 years old, except that it's in a major league stadium in the Home Run Derby? Like, what a moment.
Best of luck to him, man. I'm looking forward to it. It's cool. I know that last year for him maybe wasn't the start that he wanted, or maybe what fans wanted. And I know this year he battled a little bit of injury. He's come back and is just on fire. So rooting for Cags today. Answer your question, Space Mountain 68. Big fan of the ride. Haven't been on a long time. We are going to talk offensive line right after this quick announcement from our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. If you want a cool cup like this one with the old retro logo, the one Jordan has, the national championship one, look no further than our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. You can use promo code STADIUM15 to get 15% off of your order. It's going to keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. It kept a drink with ice in it the entire day in my parking garage. So go check them out, GameTimeSidekicks.com, promo code STADIUM15 at checkout. All right, so while we wait to see if RJ Raymond is going to join, the Gators offensive line has some question marks. They are going to be replacing three starters: Austin Barber, former All-American, Jake Slaughter, left tackle, and Damian George, who played right tackle and right guard during his time at the University of Florida, transfer from Alabama. The Gators are now being coached by national championship winning coach Phil Trotter, national champion winning player, and Gator legend, and widely considered one of the best offensive line coaches in college football, Phil Trotline, who has brought in four transfers. You're going to have a number of new starters. And then what we've learned is that a lot of these guys are being cross-trained at multiple positions to kind of see how the puzzle might fit together. So with that, Nick, you've been out at practice. You've seen some things. We're going to run through some of these names, what the projected lineup might be. But talk to us a little bit about kind of what your thoughts are, Nick, from what you've seen with your eyeballs.
It is the biggest question mark I have on the team. On the offensive side of the ball, it is my biggest area of concern. Just pulling up some of my iPhone notes for PLPs. I think I'm getting a little bit of clarity on like what the starting line will look like.
Let's run through the player. Let's just run through some names here. So you have transfer Ethan Boyer, Najee Harris.
Egan Boyer.
Egan Boyer. What did I say? Ethan?
Egan Boyer.
Ethan White. Shout out to Ethan White. Harrison Moore, the transfer. TJ Shanahan, a transfer. And Emeka Ugorji, also a transfer. So four of those five names as transfers, as maybe projected starters. Then you have redshirt junior Caden Jones, who I know a lot of Gator fans had some real optimism about, I think, going into two seasons ago, about how he played as a redshirt freshman. Rod Kearney, who we've seen a bit. Jason Zandamella, the former five-star and USC transfer. Bryce Lovett, redshirt junior. And TJ Dice, redshirt freshman. Maybe a dark horse for the season. And then you have Fletcher Westfall, Daniel Pierre-Louis from UCF. Chancellor Campbell, freshman. Genervi Carr? Nick?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Genevieve Carr. Tyler Chikuum. Desmond Green. Javari Lucas. Mark Faircloth. And Corey Brown. Are in that list there. So anyway, Nick, I just wanted to run through that. Give us kind of your thoughts.
Yeah. I think you're trying to find your starting five. You're also trying to find your 8, 9, 10. I don't know if they'll get to 10. I think maybe you get to nine, but it's probably 8. It'll be interesting. I think they're working Shanahan, transfer from Penn State. They're working him at center. He's really just been a guard, but I think it's because they're trying to find a center, a third string center. Harrison Moore, the transfer from Georgia Tech, I think he's going to win that job over Jason Zandamella at center. So you're replacing a lot, as you mentioned to begin. I think Emeka Orji is going to the transfer from Stanford. He's also super young, like just turned 19 this summer. Going to be a sophomore, just turned 19. You think he's going to be your starting left tackle. You get Najee Harris back, who's a senior. Like, where'd that come from? I guess because it's his fourth year, but like, it doesn't feel like he's been here 4 years. Played a ton of football. Harrison Moore at center, and then right guard. I think I've seen with the first team, I've seen both Rod and Bryce Lovett there. I've also seen Bryce Lovett kicked out at right tackle. But right tackle, I think. So let me go starting five. I think it's going to be Emeka, Najee, Harrison Moore, Bryce Lovett. And right tackle, I think, is going to be Caden Jones, unless for now. But even during PLPs, I'm seeing them switching that first team and moving people around. Really, the only thing that is solid is left tackle, left guard, I think. And center. Sorry, left tackle, left guard, center.
So center, left. And of the, let's talk that then, since we're here. Boyer has some experience, comes over from Penn State with Phil Trotwine, moves into that role, arguably the most important role, maybe on the entire team, but definitely on the offensive line, is that left tackle and that blind spot protection for whether it's Philo or Tramell Jones, a quarterback there. How confident are you in Egan Boyer?
He's not playing. He wasn't the one that I said was starting. Emeka.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ugori. So if we go back to spring, it looked like they wanted Egan Boyer to play left tackle, and then right tackle was going to be whoever won between Emeka and Caden Jones. I don't think Caden Jones had a very good spring, and then I think we saw Emeka and Egan kind of on either side of the line, and then really I really just see when the first team's out there, I just see Emeka over at left tackle. So I think that's going to be your starting left tackle. Egan Boyer has been running twos at left tackle. You're going to have both of them there. You know, it is still July. It's still PLPs, player-led practices, if you didn't know what that meant. But, yeah, Emeka, it's a big jump. Like, that's why I mentioned his age. Like, he played a bunch last year as, like, a 17, 18-year-old at Stanford. I don't know that the Pro Football Focus graded him highly, but, like, super young playing as a freshman. And you're still super young. It's a big, tall. It's a tall ask, like you mentioned. But it's kind of where he is. I think he's looked good. It's tough to look good he there too.
Mostly guard at Stanford, also.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that was a PFF rating that got plastered all over the internet, and certainly was one that maybe had some people raising their eyebrows. But I would imagine that most people that raised their eyebrows also didn't watch a lot of Stanford offensive line play.
They did not. Yeah. Did not. Super smart kid. Like, not worried about him picking up a new playbook. I think he was like a neurospace something engineer major at Stanford.
You say a neurospace engineer? Nick, I
something,
don't know.
Something, a, something, thing. Space. Yeah. Something space engineering. He has an internship with NASA this summer. Wildly intelligent.
Nice.
Not worried about him picking it up, but like, you're going every day, you're going against Jaden Woods, LJ McCray. You're just going up against
some dogs.
Geez, some dogs. So you're
some dudes that are better than you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going up against some guys who have played a lot of SEC snaps and who are better than you right now. So you're getting battle tested.
Certainly concerning, though, you know, having a starting left tackle who didn't play tackle last season. I'm not doubting Phil Trotwan, right? I think with the last coaching staff, he probably had some question marks. But that would be my one big, big concern is having a non-tackle ready or a player that hasn't played tackle starting at left tackle to start the year. You know, but certainly it's a guy that they believe heavily in.
I think if we would have had a second portal period, we would have been shopping. We just didn't have a second portal period.
It feels like with this line, like this is just me like projecting. It feels like they're gonna be a better pass pro team than run blocking.
I don't know.
I would say it's easier to run block than pass block, in my opinion. I'm not a lineman, but I've blocked before, and I'd rather.
That's what like. We got one of the taller offensive lines in the league, but like size wise, there's not a lot of people movers, bro. We're below average size wise in the SEC, so just think from the build, you know. What's that?
I think I'm just a firm believer in not necessarily. I know moving the line of scrimmage is really what you want in football, but I think with the way I don't know our offense fully, but I think that as long as we can get guys to cover guys up, we have a lot of good running backs that can make some things happen for you. As long as you're just not letting a dude come scot free in the backfield, you know what I'm saying? So, I think it'll be easy for us to kind of get the running game going in the passing. I'm kind of on Dan's side, and like we have a potential left tackle who didn't play tackle before, and now you're about to play tackle in the SEC, going against probably the best pass rushers every other week. That's my concern. We might need some real legs at quarterback because there's going to be some scrambling. As far as running game goes, I think a lot of the shifts and motions will kind of keep the defense a little frozen, keep the linebackers from shooting gaps. And as long as these guys can cover a guy up, which I think Phil obviously do a good job of coaching these guys up to, you know, just get a hat on a hat and just let's let these guys make plays for us. I mean, as we all know, this is definitely our biggest concern on the offensive side of the ball. Shoot, probably the entire team. But I think it's just I like that we have some young guys on the line. So I guess we got some room to grow. But as of this season and what I'm looking forward to, I'm a little bit concerned. And I think maybe these coaches are gravitating towards, hey, this is what we got to roll with. I might as well play my puppies because the puppies to the older guys are a coin flip. So I might as well play the puppies, let them get some experience. So what, we get beat up this year or we get a little bruised up, at least I got an older guy backing them up. Somebody can come in and fill in, and it's not much of a drop-off. But I like the approach as of now. Obviously, we don't know who the entire offensive line is as far as, like, starters go. But I like the approach of playing the younger guys and just rolling with the punches we got, because I honestly don't see or feel like we got a dominant guy who was a returning guy for us. Maybe Rod Kearney, because I like this game. I'm not sure. He's not. I don't know why he's not playing. I mean, maybe he's just that bad.
I mean, I think that that's the thing you have to wonder about some of these guys. Go ahead, Corey, sir.
No, you're good. I don't know why Rod's not playing, but it is a little disappointing that he hasn't turned the corner. He's very strong. Like, he's doing it. Well, everything he's supposed to do in the weight room, he's doing it. I tell you that. Like, it ain't a lack of effort. It looks phenomenal as well. Like, one of the best offensive line bodies you'll see, Paul's.
Right, for real. He's in great shape. Is it just like maybe he just doesn't understand, you know, scheme and realizing who to block and where to go, landmarks and stuff like that?
I'm not an offensive line expert, but like I think he was asked to do a lot. He played center in high school. And then they were like, no, you're going to play guard here. And like Jason Zandamello was a guard. They're like, hey, learn to snap. And then Rod's played right guard, left guard. He was your third string center last year. They've kicked him out to like try him at tackle. It's just like, hey, man, just like tell him you're going to play right guard. and give him a full year. Like, this is your position. We don't need you to be the scout team center and the second team right guard. And by the way, you're the emergency right tackle. Like, just let him say you're playing right guard. Try to master that spot and see if you can go and you can go win it, you know, win a spot.
Right.
Yeah. What I think, right? I just think offensive line play and how teams are going to approach us. I think teams are going to load the box and dare one of these quarterbacks to beat us. That's why I think it's going to be, I think that the odds of them, if you had to pick one in my mind, them being better is pass blocking in that aspect, because I just think teams are going to load the box and make, you know, one of these quarterbacks beat us. And do we have people movers to win the line of scrimmage? I don't know, man. It's a lot of inexperience. This team hinges on the offensive line. I think the success of this season hinges right here. The quarterback success, like everything's going to hit. Skill position wise, we got some of the best skill positions in the country. You know, running back room, one of the top tier rooms, receiver loaded, tight end is another story. But, you know, other than that, it's a lot of weapons. I think the quarterback, neither one of them are world beaters. But if you give them some time and a good run game, they can manage the offense is what I think out of both quarterbacks. So if the offensive line can keep these guys upright, run block, et cetera, it could be a special first season just because of the talent we have outside. But if it gets ugly up front, it could be a long season. And I'm not going to judge Phil on what we got right now. But I do think he's the best guy for the job. You know, if you're trying to makeshift an offensive line, I think Phil is the guy to kind of patchwork and get those guys cohesive for the season, but I'm not positive on it right now going in. I'm just neutral. Wait and see
more. Yeah. No, and I know we've got RJ Raymond waiting for us, so we might pause this discussion here in a minute. To answer this question, or have you guys, do you think we're going to go shopping heavy in the next portal, which will be after the next season, maybe sending some guys down the road?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to say. I would imagine the answer is yes, but also everybody is shopping for those offensive linemen.
Big humans come with big price tags.
You know, while I look at the recruiting class and it's like, wow, you know, you get a guy like Maxwell Hiller and you get these, you know, 4- and 5-star ranked guys and you're like, those are the guys that we want. We're still a couple years down the line, probably before you're going to see any real contribution. Doesn't mean that they won't play, but it's just going to take a while to get them out to play. So I think that the Gators are going to try to patchwork some things together, and hopefully they can develop some of these guys that we've wanted and expected more out of, you know, or not even just more out of, but, you know, should be producing at this time of year. I think of a Fletcher Westfall. I think of a Caden Jones. Yeah, I think of a Najee Harrison, really trying to get them to a spot where they can contribute this year and potentially even in the next year, although Najee is done after this year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hard to believe. So this can be his show out here.
I think if we can get Egan or Emeka to kind of come along and develop within this next year and be a guy for us for the upcoming season, not this season, but next season, I think that'd be good. Because like you said, we got a good recruiting class of linemen. I know we're not going to play in the portal as far as grabbing linemen. We at least got to get a couple that are worth the damn, maybe two good guys. Maybe have some other fillers in the portal as well. But, I mean, I think that would be us in good shape. I mean, to let even one of those pan out to be something, I think is not to say more than enough. But I just trust and feel that he's going to continue to recruit great.
Yeah.
The process isn't even over yet. I mean, we started out hot, and I don't imagine he's going to cool down anytime soon. So,
well, that, and we've only had 15 practices so far, right? They're in player-led practices right now, and then they still have the entire – you know, rest of the summer camp and into the fall to figure themselves out. But let's pause there. We really got through left tackle, so we'll pick up with left tackle. But before we pick back up, we want to welcome former walk-on from Fletcher High School in Atlantic Beach, Florida, from Jacksonville, the 904. My favorite. Love when we get Jacksonville guests on this show. Played multiple years for the Florida Gators and ended up earning a scholarship from Dan Mullen prior to his senior year. Won the team's most valuable offensive scout team award, was a member of special teams, played fullback, played tight end, played a lot of special teams in his career. One career reception, on a 1 yard touchdown at Tennessee, which we love to see. With that, we welcome RJ Raymond to the show. RJ, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas. Good to see you guys.
RJ, what up?
One catch, one touchdown.
That's right, baby. 100% one for one.
Not many people can do that, man. Well, congratulations. RJ, touch us a little bit. I ask everybody this story. You came in as a walk-on. So touch us a little bit about your story, how you ended up at the University of Florida.
Well, I grew up, as some of you probably know, I grew up bleeding orange and blue. I was fifth generation Gator once it came true. But my dad is a very decorated football player for the Gators as well. And so it was kind of a no-brainer. I was in high school. I transferred to Fletcher and started playing really well on the football team. And some calls started coming in, you know, later in my senior year, and ended up getting a call from Florida back and forth. And sure enough, they offered me a preferred walk-on spot. And of course, I wasn't going to turn that down, and led me there to summer of 2014. I'm a freshman walk-on on the team. And the story from there, it goes on. You guys know, some of you guys know it, but yeah, it was a pretty crazy time. It was awesome. It was unbelievable. Something that, I honestly didn't even think I could dream of doing, and it ended up coming true, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, RJ's dad, former kicker Bobby Raymond, kicked for the Gators in 83 and 84. So you came to University of Florida. I guess you were also an All-American in lacrosse, too. Did it ever cross your mind to play lacrosse? Or?
Yeah, it did. I was honestly, for the most of my high school career, thought that's – where I was going to end up going to college, or what I was going to go to college for, was to play lacrosse. I had a few schools looking at me to go play lacrosse. I was doing the summer travel ball and all that kind of stuff. And the reality of it is, the first high school I went to, Episcopal in Jacksonville, it was kind of the opposite of Fletcher, where I ended up graduating, where we had a really, really good lacrosse team at Episcopal, and the football team was, for lack of a better term, not the best. And then I transferred to Fletcher, and it was the opposite. And we had some ballers on the team at Fletcher, and it kind of helped elevate my play when I was around some studs. I think we had like 9 players my senior year go D1 on at Fletcher. That was, you know, Villanova and Rutgers and FIU, and we had a bunch of studs. And so that kind of helped me get a little bit more of the spotlight in the football world. But yeah, for a long time I was, you know, I wasn't dead set on either, but yeah, I was getting a lot more looks early on in my high school career to go play lacrosse. But obviously when Scott Strickland and Will Muschamp start calling, you pick up and you tend to lean towards them.
100%. So what would you say is your best Muschamp story? I forgot you had a little bit of Champ before he got up.
Yeah. Muschamp, man, he I guess not Muschamp himself, but when I went there, you know, as a walk-on, your first couple SEC practices, and you know, you, I'm sure Scarlett, even, you know, as good of a player as you were, your first couple practices, you're like, holy crap, everybody's fast, everybody's huge, you know, deer in the headlights, like, man, you think you're the baller, you think you're a stud coming in because you're all the best players on your high school team, and you're just kind of like frozen, like, oh, okay, I really got to pick this up here. This is a different world. And I remember I was staying on the sideline, and we were doing good on good, and Dante Fowler was on that squad. And I remember they ran a screen play to his side, and it was like first or second day in pads, and they ran it to his side, and he's coming off the ball hot, and they try to dump it over his head, and he stopped off and jumped off of 1 foot and picked it off one-handed and took it to the house. And I was like, this is the real deal. I'm here.
Right.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, Six was that guy.
What is that? Is that your biggest welcome to college football that you had? Or?
I would say that, and honestly, Keanu Neal. I remember him. I'm sitting there in the middle of camp, maybe day 10, my true freshman year, and that whistle blew for the water break, you know, at the, you know, coach, we were still doing that. I can't remember if it was like required or what, but we'd have like a little 5-minute water break. And I was like, oh man, thank God I am dying out here. And Kiki, he was sitting on a knee, steam coming out of his ears, pissed off because we had a water break. And after about 3 minutes in the water break, he kept slamming his helmet on the ground. I'm like, why ain't we practicing? I was like, oh my God, man. It was those two moments. I was like, this is the real deal. It was wild, but learning, having those guys on the team and learning from them, seeing how the guys like Vernon and Keanu and DJ Humphreys and even Rod, Dante, Jared Davis, I mean, you name it, I couldn't have had a better, not necessarily senior class, but older classmates and teammates that, you know, to learn from and learn their leadership. It was incredible.
Jordan likes to tell us this practice story about how he rolled a shoulder into Kiki's chest and de-cleated him. We don't know the validity of this story, but then Jordan did make sure he was one of those guys like in line counting, like, okay, is that no?
Let me move back one because I'm not with Keanu anymore. Hold on, coach.
I got to tie my shoe. Yeah, I'm hiding after that one. He got to crying. I'm like, oh, no.
Jordan got his one lick and goes, you know what? I'm going to take my ball. I'm going to go home. I'm done.
Yeah. I remember Kiki one time. I forget who it was. I had a bunch of them. I forget which staff it was under. It was either – it had to have been McElwain. But I forget, maybe Coach Nuss, they threw a screen pass to Tez, and this was in camp, and Kiki came down like a bullet, and just, I have never seen a man that big do a backflip, and Kiki made just near leg, near shoulder, right into his chest, and made Martez like backflip. It was, and everybody was stunned, shocked. A bunch of people were laughing. I think Coach Nuss was laughing, like, well, I guess I'm never gonna call that one again. It was crazy.
That's funny. Yeah, I remember that one though for sure.
How many moments would you have like that? Because like when we watch football practice now, there's not like a lot of, it's like thud.
Yeah,
I guess Keanu's thud is a little different.
Yeah, than some people's.
Around. Yeah, a lot of people's welcome to college football is Keanu Neal, Nick.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I don't know how open camp practices are, you know, how much the everybody outside the direct organ, you know, the team and the coaches and the trainers get to see, but camp is where a lot of that stuff would happen. Yeah. You know, when you get into the game weeks and stuff, it's kind of, you know, it is thud most for the most part. It's good on good. Everybody's trying to stay preserved, but camp is when the money's made. Camp's when everybody's trying to earn the seat on the bus. And a lot of times there's no love lost. And, you know, it's, hey, I'm out here trying to feed my family. You're out here trying to feed your family. And that's when most of that stuff happens. And there's a good reason that a lot of those practices are closed.
RJ, so you get scout team, what was it, most valuable offensive scout team award.
Yep.
The next year, you're still on the scout team, but then you made an impact on special teams going into what I guess would be considered your redshirt sophomore year. There, yep. Played against North Texas as your debut. Talk to us a little bit about that transition from, you know, scout team to ultimately earning that spot on special teams, because a lot of guys vying for those spots.
Yeah, so to be completely honest, I knew that was my route, like the best way I had to get some playing time, to get real recognition and, you know, find myself on the field in meaningful snaps. And so, you know, I took every practice the same way up to the last one before we played Michigan my senior year in the Peach Bowl. Jordan will tell you that. But what I did that year, honestly, was – every day I'd show up about 30 minutes before the meeting would start. Granted, I had a fortunate enough class schedule that I could do that. I didn't have to rush in, you know, with 10 minutes to get dressed. I had some time before, and I would go into the special teams coordinator's office and just sit with him, whether it was a specific question or anything. I just sit with him and go over the game plan, go over what we were doing every week, go over just every single day. I remember Keith Murphy. He was the the QC, special teams QC guy at the time, and I would sit in his office every single day, watch film. So I kind of knew what was happening before the special teams meeting every day. And then when it came time to rep it, it was go time. And, you know, I took that very, very seriously. And then sure enough, I started seeing, you know, my name started moving up on the depth chart a little bit. And finally, there it was, top of the list. So it took a lot of sacrifice, a lot of time, but it ended up being well worth it.
Tell me, hold on. I think you're remembering this wrong. Peach Bowl was we smoked Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say something wrong?
No. I think he was thinking Cotton Bowl. That was Mullen. Peach Bowl. Was
yeah,
great.
Yeah. My Peach last Bowl. Practice before. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. My last game was Michigan in the Peach Bowl. We beat the snot out of them.
2014 was the Florida Georgia game. Mike McNeely.
Yeah.
Field goal touchdown.
Yeah.
What kind of win was that for one special teams and walk ons in the building?
Yeah, that was crazy. Old Mike, man, I remember he was working at Publix at the time and just trying to make ends meet as a walk-on. And, you know, we went crazy for him. That was awesome. You know, it's a little different nowadays. I'm sure none of them really have to work at Publix anymore he was in medical or pre-med working at Publix, walk-on, man. That guy was, you know, it was self-explanatory, but man, that was awesome. That was a great moment for sure.
Yeah, I work for Florida Victorious now, so we pay the players. The parking lot looks a lot different. Yeah. Way less scooters.
Yeah,
the
parking lot.
Ain't no more scooters out there. I was there.
No. There's some Olympic sport athletes, a couple of baseball players still have
scooters. Yeah, that's who got the scooters. Not
the softball players. I get it.
Not a lot of scooters on the football team.
Yeah,
that's good because I remember seeing the Pouncey brothers share a scooter. It sounds like an urban legend, but anybody that was there during that time will remember.
Taz and Fred.
On a scooter all year long.
Taz and Fred were best buddies, and those guys would get on scooter all the time. It was like damn near 800 pounds on a little scooter.
For the scooter company.
You can't have two offensive linemen going nuts to butts on a scooter. It just can't happen.
That's where Nick draws the offensive
lineman. What was, I guess it was probably with Champ, the fullback position. How much was that still used? Now it's a position.
It was used a good bit with Champ, and I remember Coach Nuss, actually, he came up to me, and I was still kind of playing scout team defense and kind of working into special teams at the time, and he's like, RJ, what do you think about playing fullback? I'm like, let's go. I love it. Let's do it. And
you're like, Coach, you can stop after you say, what do you think about playing? Yes.
Yeah. And put in some packages for me that year, 2016 it was, I believe, and put in some packages, some little H-back motion, short yardage stuff. And then funny story about that is I've seen it floated around on a couple articles every now and then, but when Mullen got there for my senior year, you know, I played – D-line, I played linebacker, I played tight end. I met with the tight ends, but I was really only a fullback the year before because we didn't have tight ends, you know, and like the running game it was just kind of like, what's going on here? And so I went into Coach Mullen's office. I'm like, told him that same thing, you know, and obviously I was a little more prepared and had more of a script, but I was like, so where do you want me to meet when we meet in like 2 weeks for our first, you know, official my senior year season? He's like, just stick with the tight ends. And so, I kind of played more like with Mush or McElwain. It was fullback pretty much only in H and special teams, obviously, but it was like kind of a H-back motion on the goal line, short yardage situation. But then I was pretty much a tight end with under Mullen, but was used as kind of that similar H-back tight end kind of fullback short yardage situation. But I was mostly a pretty much meeting with the tight ends, but playing fullback.
Do you know when you caught that touchdown against Tennessee? Was that and I don't remember it explicitly, and I should have looked it up before. Was that a play that was going to you, or were you just in the right place at the right time?
It was a play designed for – there's kind of a corner and a flat. It's a short yardage goal line play, and it was designed, you know, play action. There's either, you know, me right in the flat or Morrill Stevens, our tight end, kind of had a mm-hmm. corner route. And it's just, it was one of the, if I was covered, he'd hit Morrill. If he was covered, he'd just, you know, he has that throw it out of the end zone option. So it was somebody got tackled at the one, and I got so excited. It might have been you, Scarlett. Yeah, you might have got hawked and got tackled at the one.
Classic.
Yeah. And because I knew we had that in the plan this week. They would always, you know, we'd always have four or five goal line plays or short yardage plays. And Coach Mullen was like, if we get on the one, this is play one. And sure enough, somebody got stopped short, and Felipe tried a QB sneak or something. I think that's how it went. And then sure enough, we called it and was wide open. The cool thing about that is too, you'll see if you watch like the actual game, the broadcast version of it, you know, CBS or whatever the game was on, it just so happened that, you know, it was in the corner where they put the Gator fans, and when they panned to the fans, both of my parents were like center of the screen. It almost looked like they knew, and I don't think they did, but it was almost like it was one of those where they zoom in on the parents, and it was pretty cool.
That's neat.
That's right. See if I can pull it up real quick.
Do you still have the football? Do they keep that for you on the sideline?
Was
Jordan so mad that you took his touchdown that he
probably
tucked it in Knoxville?
That's probably what happened, because I told, like, I gave it – I forget which equipment manager I gave it to, but I was like, hey, you protect this thing with your life. And I had to go run for the kickoff or whatever it is after that. And unfortunately, I never saw it again. They probably gave it right back to the ball boy and another game ball. But
I don't know what the penalty would have been, but I would have died laughing if you were still holding the football. Like, hey, yeah, I know I'm running down on kickoff. Whatever the penalty is, and we have a second ball here. Like, I'm not leaving. It's not leaving.
Yeah. If I knew my parents were right there, I didn't get to know where they were sitting, but if I knew they were there, I'd have thrown it to them and took the penalty, you know. It wouldn't have mattered. We beat the hell out of them anyways.
Well, Dan looks that up. Do you remember, when did you start traveling? Do you remember like the first time you were on the travel?
Like the one when I traveled to every game was 16. I made a couple games in 15. I was kind of up and down in 15. And then 16, I was on the bus pretty much the whole time.
What's that like then, 15, like the first time the list gets put up on like Wednesday or Thursday, and you get to like call home and tell mom and dad, hey, by the way.
That was crazy. I don't think basically ever since then, my parents bought a ticket to every away game, because I think that was one that it might have been too late. I forget it. I forget which one it was, but it was, you know, my dad, I could just hear both my mom and my dad. You know, my mom went to Florida as well. She ended up not graduating, but my mom and dad both went there, you know, that you could just tell. I think they were with my grandma who, you know, she went to UNC Chapel Hill, but she married a Gator. And so they were all ecstatic. It was incredible. And then, you know, also kudos to my parents after that, you know, the sacrifices they had to make. They made every single one. My mom would even, you know, home games, she would spend the Thursday or Friday night with my now wife. But she would spend Thursday or Friday and make a bunch of cookies or cake or cupcakes, a bunch of them, and she'd be waiting at the hotel for us. And after meetings, she'd hand out a couple cookies and cupcakes. She called herself the Cookie Mom, and she would even call ahead away games and find a bakery or something up in Nashville or wherever we were, and she'd call this little tiny SEC town, this little bakery, and was like, hey, I need 15 dozen assorted cookies or 15 dozen cupcakes. And she'd be like, what? And yeah, so she would travel and make sure she was there at the hotel on Friday nights and give us all cookies or cupcakes or sweets. The nutritionist hated it, but you weren't going to tell my mom no.
Yeah. So you said you're fifth generation Gator. Was your dad the first to play for UF or did your grandfather?
He was the first to play football. So okay. My great-great-grandfather was a professor and student, you know, student then professor. Yeah. Then my great-grandfather was on the basketball team, and I believe he was the captain for 1 year. Okay. Wow. And then my grandfather just – excuse me, he just attended the university. He went, he was a landscape architect and went on to have a pretty storied golf course architect career. And then my dad went, he walked on as well. Yeah. And then myself.
Wow.
What position did your dad play?
Kicker.
Bobby Ray.
No touchdowns.
Nick, you should know this. Yeah. 83, 84. Nick's our teams guy, but he's more of a
He's got, I think, definitely one record still, the most points scored in a game by a kicker with 23. And then it's like five field goals and six extra points or something like that. It was in Kentucky. I think it was the year that I know he did it, the game that clinched the SEC title for them. The first one that, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard about or, you know, talked about that the school, they just started, they just recognized him for the first time in 24. They had the big 40-year anniversary and brought them all out on the field. But I know he did it against Kentucky to clinch that first SEC title. And then he's got a percentage or something, you know, something for highest percentage under 45 yards or something like that still.
But no touchdown versus Tennessee.
No.
Let's see. Set a school record for consecutive field goals made. 17. Wow. Shout out to your dad. Shout out to your pops.
What was the locker room like? You guys had you were through so many regimes. What's it like going through that and having so much turnover? And then also like play with Felipe Franks. I remember, I don't think you were there by the time it was like the end of his career and he was telling people to shush. Yeah. But like there was it just seemed like there was always something happening from 2014 to 18.
It was wild. It was, you know, the locker room, everybody, Jordan and I could sit here till we go to sleep tonight telling locker room stories, as everybody could. You know, we weren't special, but the locker room's a special place. But, you know, I think a big difference is the transfer portal wasn't a thing. So even with all those coaches that came and left and whatever happened, the guys pretty much stayed the same. And so you kind of knew who each other were. It's not like you had a big, you know, there weren't 55, 60 new teammates every year. It was kind of just the freshmen that came in, and you'd have maybe three or four guys transfer, both in and out. And so, you know, everybody kind of knew each other. Everybody had their good friends, but we were all still, you know, teammates, but everybody, you know, knew what each other were about, knew who each other were year after year, and kind of knew what pushed each other and how to push everybody's buttons and how to, you know, get under people's skin when you wanted to. And, how to push people the right way too, you know, get people going. And so I think that was a big part of it. But I mean, guys like Antonio Morrison and Jared Davis and Marcus May and Dante Fowler, Vernon Hargraves. I mean, I could keep going and going and going, just having those guys to kind of first get into, you know, when I first started there, and then seeing how they do things, you know, even, you know, Vern, first team All-American consensus, or, you know, all the accolades he had, watch how he went about his business. And, you know, guys like Dante and Andre DeBose was on the team my freshman year. And, you know, just all of these guys that grew up, quite frankly, watching and being a fan of, and then being able to share a locker room and being a teammate with them was just like, it was incredible. And learning how they all worked and what leadership truly meant helped out a ton for sure.
I don't know if he was a leader, but he has become a dear friend. What was Jake McGee like? I've got some Midtown stories from Jake McGee.
I do too. What,
a legend in Midtown. I don't know if those are for publication, but what was Jake like?
Jake was awesome. He's just always the same, no matter what. Even, you know, after he got injured, and he was just the same guy, always happy go lucky, always in a good mood, always bringing the energy. And even when everybody was slow and hurting, and he was just, you know, I can't say enough good about him. He would always, you know, one of those guys that'll pick up whenever you call kind of thing. He's the man.
Yeah. There were a bunch of games where I'd be like out at the bar, allegedly drinking with like John Jalapio, a bunch of the offensive linemen, and Jake.
Yeah.
Just great success rate.
Yeah.
Better closer than Marion Rivera.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake's the man.
What was your favorite away stadium that you played in?
LSU. Yeah. As much as I hate them. I mean, like, I hate them. And but it was that place, especially when whoever started the fight, but that fight had Scarlett was right in the middle. That 2015 year, that game, they made us go play, or 2015 or 16, they made us go there.
Matthew year.
Yep. The Hurricane game. They made us go there at noon.
You guys were scared and you guys didn't want to do all that. Yeah, I remember that
game. Yeah. LSU for sure is a crazy place to play. It was awesome. And, you know, it's a common opponent. It was a rival every year. You knew what time it was. It was kind of one of those deals where it's like, all right, it's LSU week, you know. You tie your cleats a little bit tighter and you strap your helmet on a little tighter. And, it's LSU for sure.
That's interesting because talking to some of the guys on the roster now, they say that Neyland is louder than Death Valley. I've always said that the Swamp and Death Valley, 1A, 1B, and the guys on the team now are like, no, Tennessee's tougher to play.
Yeah. It was loud for about 3 minutes when we were there.
You're like, man, it was super loud when we were warming up. And then, like, they flipped that coin, and all of a sudden, there's a bunch of empty seats.
Exactly.
How was it like being in the film room with Ciante Lewis?
Man.
Yes, Ciante the clown.
Ciante.
That guy is one of a kind, man. He is incredible, but also one of those dudes that will give you the shirt off his back. And he was so much fun to be around, man. He was always trying to bring up the mood when everybody was feeling down. And, you know, he was incredible. Another one of those guys you can't say enough about, and he's always going to have your back. We're still in a couple group texts, you know, with Kyle Pitts was there my senior year, and me, Kamori Gamble, Ciante. Every now and then, usually about once a year or so, well, something will pop up. But, yeah, he's looks like he's doing well, too. I haven't caught up with him recently, but it looks like he's doing well in Alabama, I think. And I think he's head coach of the varsity football team or something. He's doing pretty well. So I'm happy for him.
Ciante on the show. I was a young buck. I wasn't even like really covering the game. It was never my job, but I went to a 7-on-7 camp and I met him and Bo Scarborough, who was his cousin, at a 7-on-7 camp when they were in high school. And Ciante Lewis, I think, was an upcoming senior, but he was like 6'5 and weighed like maybe 150 pounds. He was like the skinniest dude ever, but he balled out. And then from there, his recruiting trajectory really took off, but he was just one of one as a human being. So I'm glad to see he's doing so well. We need to get him on the show sometime.
For sure.
Let me know if this story surprises you. It was at that tournament, RJ, and Cam Newton's there.
Oh, God, yeah.
Ciante Lewis walks up to Cam Newton. I don't know if it was after a touchdown or something. There was some reason why he walks up to Cam Newton and, like, tosses a football at him, starts gator chomping him, and talking shit that Cam had transferred. I'm just like, what? Again, like a rising senior, 17-year-old junior high school. And I'm just like, what are you doing? This is the starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers.
Well, he probably just won the MVP that year or something, too, or just left from the Super Bowl. Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, everybody was like in awe that Cam Newton was there because he had a 7-on-7. And then Ciante just throws him the ball and then just keeps it moving. I don't think Cam loved the disrespect, but
no,
Cam was not a fan. Guys, Cam was not a fan. It did not deter Siante at all.
Nothing, not very much does deter Siante.
RJ, before we head out, obviously as a lifelong Gator fan and everything else, I'm sure you still keep up with the program and everything else. What are your thoughts going into to this year?
So far, man, I got two young kids now, so I haven't gotten down there. I didn't get down there last year, but I try to keep up with it while keeping up with them. But I love what I'm seeing from Coach Sumrall. I mean, you can see what he's doing in the recruiting class, with the recruiting class he's got. You know, everything can change nowadays, but you're hoping he can hold that together and finish strong. And, you know, there's no reason to think otherwise. And I just kind of love what he's about. He's just, you know, hearing himself talk and then hearing players talk about him in the little clips I do see. He's just kind of like, no business. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to coach you. I'm here to love you. And you're probably not going to like what I have to say a lot of the time. And, but it's for good reason. I'm here to win football games. I'm here to win now. And I think it's exactly what we needed. And, you know, I think he's going to have a pretty successful career at the University of Florida. And, you know, ball's got to get kicked off and players got to put on those pads. But so far, you know, you can't not like anything. You know, from what I've seen and what I've heard, it looks like we're going to have a pretty successful year. Obviously, there's going to be a few, you know, hiccups. You would assume year one with a brand new staff, him assembling a new staff in Gainesville and, you know, a new system for all the players to learn. But heck, you know, I think, honestly, I hate to keep touching on it, but the transfer portal now, it's almost like kids are used to it. You know, it's, you know, they're going from school to school to school, even, you know, four or five schools in a kid's career. And so they can pick up on things a lot quicker, and it's, I think it's going to be an exciting year for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 56 new players this year. I know you guys are cycling out, you know, maybe 25 a year with a recruiting class, a couple transfers in, a couple transfers out. So definitely a different brand of football now. But man, RJ, we always love talking to, you know, the unheralded player, maybe not the big name, just the stories that you have. You know, it really encapsulates what the total experience of being a Gator athlete is. And I'm sure not only is your lineage ahead of you super proud of what you did, I'm sure it was awesome. Donning that orange and blue, catching a touchdown against one of the Gators' biggest rivals, even though I guess we're not playing every year anymore. It's a really cool story. Congratulations on all your success, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Sorry, it was a little later, but I was having trouble getting the kids down tonight, so I had to jump on as quick as I could. But I appreciate you guys for having me, and if you ever want to talk again or chat again, let me know. I'd love to hop on.
Absolutely, man. We'll look forward to it. RJ, thank you so much, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon. Go Gators.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Go Gators.
Appreciate it.
All right. RJ Raymond. Touchdown against Tennessee. One career catch, one career touchdown. Pretty cool story. Corey left during the middle, and I'm sure you guys wonder what happened to him. Computer just crashed, died out. Like not like computer, like battery died, but like gone. Everything's gone. So Corey will be back next week. Nick, let's finish up our discussion on offensive line a little bit. We really kind of got through the left tackle, so I want to go through the rest of the line before we wrap up. We appreciate everybody for sticking around for that. Before we get into that, make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the retweet button on X as well, or whatever we call it. Nick, let's talk left guard. So Gory, probably right now you're starting left tackle. Let's move in a little bit.
Yeah. It's easier to go with Emeka. I don't know if we're saying Ugori correctly or not, but
probably not.
I'm saying Emeka, right? Left guard would be Najee Harris. I think that's pretty cemented there.
Yeah.
Center Harrison Moore, then Jason Zandamella, and then your third, I think, is looking like Shanahan. Mark Faircloth was also over there. He played left tackle. He played tackle last year. They've slid him in to center, trying to find that third center because you're two roll up away from not having anyone to snap the ball.
Yeah, Mark Faircloth, former walk-on from the pro. If you're not familiar with the name, just so we're not just naming people here. Sorry, I had his thing pulled up here. Went to Florida State University School, originally from Quincy, Florida, 6'5", 324 pounds. Did play in 12 games last year, a lot of snaps versus LIU, and then did some stuff on special teams. I would imagine that would be on probably kick block or kick
no, protection. He was on, like field goal.
Yeah, field goal protection. That's what I meant. Played a little bit there, but again, it goes Harrison Zandamella, the transfer from USC, to Faircloth there. So, and then let's get into right guard, Nick.
Yeah, I think right guard will be interesting because I think when you look at that spot, they're trying – Bryce Lovett there. I think we all,
yeah,
the Bryce Lovett right tackle experiment didn't work out well. He got kicked into right guard last year, like midseason. He was also dealing with like injuries last year, so probably it's tough to gain the strength. I don't think he had the feet. I don't think he has the footwork for tackle. And then I think because of his injuries, he didn't really get to show the strength or develop the strength to play inside. You know, it's a lot different when you're handling an LJ McCray or a Jaden Woods versus a Brandon Bett and a Jeremiah McLeod.
Yeah.
Two totally different kind of battles that you're facing, whether you're at tackle or guard. So I think he's there, and then probably battling with Rod Kearney, also Shanahan would be, you know, your – Shanahan and Kearney would be your guys, next guys up on the interior, whether it's a guard or a center.
Okay. All right. And then right tackle.
Right tackle. They've been looking at Caden Jones. Could be Caden Jones. I was not impressed. I'm not a football coach. I was not impressed with Caden Jones. And then Bryce Lovett has also been kicking out there. Egan Boyer would be a guy, too, that could play left or right tackle.
Yeah, Egan Boyer, a name that Gator fans might be familiar with. He's a redshirt sophomore, transferred over from Penn State under Phil Trotwine. 6'8", 300 pounds, 8 games, 1 start, 120 overall snaps, including 83 on the offensive line. So I guess he played some special teams there. Did start the Pinstripe Bowl against Clemson, 78 snaps there. Played a little bit as a true freshman, redshirted. Originally a 4-star out of college. But again, maybe a name that the Gator fans are familiar with whenever your coach goes to a new school and a player follows, there's maybe an expectation that that person might be solidified on that offensive line. But him and TJ Shanahan were the two that joined from Penn State. So I guess we'll see. At the end of the day, you want to get the best five, and then you want to be able to have as many as you can beyond that. You know, I know Nick said 10 would be a goal. 10 is probably a very lofty goal for any team, especially in the transfer portal era. I would say 8, maybe 9 is probably what you're looking at in terms of what could be expected out of these names. But a lot of youngsters in this group too. You know, Nick, when you mentioned some of these names, Harrison Moore, a junior, so he'll have a year, maybe two left, depending on his year. Bryce Lovett's going to go into his redshirt junior year, so a little bit older. But TJ Dice, a guy whose name we haven't been brought up, might be thrust up into there. He's a redshirt freshman. Egan Boyer is a redshirt sophomore. Emeka Ujiri is a sophomore. TJ Shanahan, what?
I was saying true sophomore.
Oh, yeah, true sophomore. TJ Shanahan, a redshirt junior, so potentially you have 2 years out of him. Fletcher Westfall, 6'8", 331 pounds. Up until this upcoming recruiting class is the highest-ranked offensive lineman the Gators have gotten in one of their recruiting classes since, I believe, 2017. He's a redshirt sophomore, Rod Kearney, redshirt junior. But then, you know, after that, there's going to probably be an expectation that you're going to get some of these younger guys in there and, you know, hopefully you can carry over and then just augment next transfer portal class. Because, again, it's going to be really hard to expect much out of at a freshman going into to next year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just an area. Oh, and a bunch of people, right as we were getting RJ on, a bunch of people were talking about why am I blanking on his name? You just said it. Fletcher, Westfall.
Yeah,
A bunch of people were talking about him. He's just had injuries. He's had surgeries on like both hands, wrists, and for a position where you're punching and striking, and you need shoulder strength, bicep, chest, upper body strength when you can't lift because your hands are in casts, it just sets you back. So like he's going into his third year, but really development wise has not been able to have that time to develop because of his injuries. Healthy now. Fully participating in PLPs, but you know, you can say like, hey, you've been on campus for 3 years, but you've been in cast and in the training room more than you've been on the practice field, which, you know, it happens.
Yeah. And I think no matter how you slice it, you know, whenever you lose three starters, you know, Jake Slaughter was an All-American. You have a second round left tackle that's being lost. And, you know, even with Damian George leaving, you're still losing a lot of snaps and you're replacing that by not a lot of snaps. It doesn't mean that the talent won't be there. It just means that you lose that experience. And yes, you have a new offensive line coach. Yes, you have a new offensive coordinator. Yes, I believe that Buster Faulkner is better at calling plays than William Hall Napier is. And I believe that they can probably work around maybe some of their deficiencies. It's still some big question marks on what that looks like going into fall camp. Again, Nick was there for spring camp. Have you been there for the PLPs? You've been there for some, it seems.
Yeah, I've been to three of the four. And I'll be back on Wednesday, Friday.
So you have another couple of weeks of player-led practices, and then you get into spring – or, pardon me, fall camp, which just got announced – yesterday. So the Gators are going to have their first fall camp on August the 5th. They're going to have two scrimmages on the 15th and the 22nd. John Summerall will meet with the media on August 4th, and then he'll also meet with the media next Wednesday, where Nick and I will be attendance at SEC Media Days. But just to run through that schedule for you real quick, that's all I have. So August 5th. Wednesday, August 5th is their first day of practice. And then that will move into ultimately their kickoff of the first game, September 5th at 7:45 against FAU. Any final thoughts on the offensive line before we head out of here?
Hope them boys just get a hat on a hat, man, and we can get this thing rolling. Let's not overcomplicate it, fellas.
Yeah, I mean, despite the fact that there's a lot of new names, there is still quite a bit of experience on that offensive line, and you hope just another offseason, another weight room, especially in their newly redesigned Sorenex backed weight room, that the boys can get it all together going into next season. So with that, that brings us to the end of the show. We thank our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit them, alumnihall.com, or go visit them in Gainesville, Florida, right off of Archer Road on the north side of the road, right next to Chick-fil-A. I think there's a Cava over there now, too. But go check that out in Butler Plaza. So again, alumnihall.com or Alumni Hall in Gainesville. And don't forget about our friends over at Brett Insurance and Financial Services at the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. And Game Time Sidekicks, where you can use promo code STADIUM15 at checkout. With that, we will see you guys in the same corner, same time next week. And we are going to start discussing tight ends, and then we might even get into part of the defense, or maybe we do tight ends and special teams together in that
day.
Next week. Huge day. Again, Nick and I will be at SEC Media Days on the 22nd. Andy Staples is going to come on the following week, and then we're going to get you a couple more interviews between now and the start of football season, where we will be recording on our traditional Monday night show, and then we will also be doing Game Day Eve again. We'll record on Fridays, so back to twice-a-week content there. With that, appreciate everybody for watching. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button if you haven't already, hit that retweet button, and we will see you guys the same corner, same time next week. Peace.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vest Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vest Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vest Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vest Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big.